friends. We're back again. I'm actually creating some good content instead of cross-posting, which are great, but you know, I have friends and we got to talk to them. So this week I am here with someone who had started a lot of our journeys into the Closureverse and wants to help even more people get started. And I will let them introduce themselves. And will you say your name and pronouns?
Hey, Jordan. Yeah, thanks for having me. My name is Daniel Higginbotham. My pronouns are he, him, and it's really great to be here.
Yeah, cool. So yeah, Daniel and I have, he initially had sent me, I think it was a Twitter message kind of recently. And it was, it's so crazy when you learn the Closureverse is so small that, you know, it's been a few different times you read books of people and then you meet the people and you're like, what? Oh my gosh, it's the real person. And, Daniel had sent me a Twitter message asking if I was interested in being involved in a little project he was getting off the ground. And of course, I was super duper excited, and we will hear some more about that later. But yeah, it's not often that, you know, the author of the book that was so influential in your career just messages you on Twitter, hey. And I assume, you know, I'm making a lot of assumptions that we all know, but he is the author of Closure for the Brave and True. And I'll say one of the reasons that I really enjoy that book, it helped me learn because I love how you tell a story. And when, you know, you present this technical content with a narrative and a story that sticks in your brain, like I still remember the Hobbit hash map. And, you know, I'd love to hear about, like, how'd you get started in that and what made you make it so funky? And like, why did you even write the book to begin with? Tell us a little bit about that.
Yeah, sure. It's really cool to hear that. I mean, obviously you've told me before that you read the book and whatnot, but I guess it's always, you know, cool to hear people, read the book and liked it. let's see. So I'm trying to think what can I share about the whole writing the book, that process. At the time I was working at McKinsey, the morally gray consulting company. I was young, you know, I didn't, well, anyway, I was working at McKinsey and got introduced to Closure. It was funny, like I was using Ruby on Rails primarily at the time, and so I had used it long enough. I think like for 7 or 8 years at that point that I was starting to get a little bit burnt out on some of the problems that like I would run into, and so along comes Closure. I'm like, whoa, this like solves, the immutability, for example. I was like, wow, this like solves so many problems that like I have just with this part, you know? I was wanting to, get other people to use it. And also, I found that like actually, there weren't necessarily like full guides like online at the time. Where coming from Rubyland, there was like you had like these, you know, really funky intros, like, you know, Wise Poignant Guide to Ruby, which were fun and were free online. And it was a mix of things. Of like one of them was like I was writing pretty regularly at the time. And this just, you know, like the idea of, oh, why don't I just like put together some tutorials for my coworkers? But then also, in terms of like wanting to make it fun, I was also like McKinsey is kind of a button up place. I was just like, became kind of like an outlet, you know, for some of my goofiness. But yeah, also I think like the other writing that I was doing at the time was like some of that too. I don't know. I just like, the other thing about like writing in this kind of goofy way is just like, writing is hard and to make it just like easy, like make it more engaging even for myself. Like, you know, I would try to just come up with things that at least would make me laugh. Then I would hope it wouldn't be too out there or too ridiculous for other people. So I don't know. Those are some of the elements for how it came about. But I guess I would say also too, like, you know, working at McKinsey, I mean, like, that was like, it was like a really good paying job. And I think at the time I started writing the book, I was 27 or something. And I started working at McKinsey when I was 25. And like the whole idea of like putting this book out there for free, it was like, I come from like a background. I grew up poor, right? Like we were on welfare. And so, you know, for me, like to be able to like have this, live this life, that was like so different from how I grew up was, you know, was and continues to be, just amazing. And so that's the other reason, like why I wanted to make it free was like when I talked to the, like, no charge to publishers, I wanted to find a publisher where, you know, part of the deal would be like this, you know, remains accessible to anybody online. So I think the cover is like most of the bases there.
I relate to you as far as creating engaging content, like that's as an outlet that's fun and creative for myself, and then also can hopefully maybe help some people, because I also come from like a self-taught, I too used to be poor and learning, learning programming is just so, so empowering. So how did you get, so you were at McKinsey and then you wrote the book and then did it skyrocket your career?
I don't know if that's the verb I would use. No, like I'm doing, it definitely opened up like a lot of doors. Like, and that's part of what's been so crazy about this is like, it's been interesting. So, I mean, I don't feel like I've been doing much in public for a while, you know, and, which is like fine, but like, that's like, now I'm starting to do more stuff in public again. But like, what's been really interesting is just like the degree of generosity and like goodwill that like I've received from people. It's like, it's crazy too. Cause like it's for like a really long time, it was like really hard to kind of take that in. like on the personal level, you know, but also like on the professional level, it's like, you know, people would reach out. I remember, kind of earlier on, you know, there's just like one random person who was just like, hey, you know, I like what you're doing. I want to support you. Do you want to like come give this training for, I think it was like Citibank or something. And I was like, okay. Like, you know, but yeah, that just people reaching out like that was like actually really, amazing. And so stuff like that actually continues to happen. You know, a while back I did some contracting with Apple, for example, which, that was, you know, one of the people there, like the manager, like, you know, just really loved the book. And for me, it was just like, what a treat that I got to actually work remotely for Apple and like, actually, you know, fly out there and like, you know, see stuff. And so, yeah, I don't know. It's really, it's an interesting question because I feel like, you know, career choices, that's like as much about like what you put into it. Right. But it's, I continue to be astounded about like how, I even just got like this intro. This sounds like me patting myself on the back.
You should, you deserve it. You deserve it. We're into talking ourselves up. This is 2022. We compliment ourselves. No negative self-talk. You know my rules.
Yeah. Well, I think the thing about it is like, it's interesting that, okay. The thing that I think might be useful for other people to hear about is to hear about, like, there's an aspect to like this journey that I think a lot of people experience where like, yeah, you know, the work that you do that's meaningful to you, but then also putting it out there and like having it like live in the world and, and how that interacts with like your own kind of, you know, history or like your own hangups or whatever. Right. So like, yeah, like this is, I've had these hangups around like, really like, you know, really appreciating, like, oh my God, okay, I actually did make this thing that, like, you know, thousands of people have, like, read and have benefited from. Like, it feels, like, kind of unreal to me. But on the other hand, like, it is, you know, this, like, this real thing that continues to be, you know, beneficial to people. And then also, like, and so the thing I was going to share, too, is just, like, randomly got an email from, like, an old colleague who said, like, he wanted to intro, like, you know, me to this, some fintech CTO person who says, apparently, like, you know, he started at this one company and like mentioned something about, like, all the engineers there have, like, a copy of my book on their desk. And it's like, yeah, so, like, I feel like, anyway, so your question was about, like, you know, has this skyrocketed my career? I think it definitely opens doors. And I think that the other interesting thing that I'll say about that is because, like, writing that book in some ways felt risky in the sense of, like, you know, it's like it's different, right? And at least for me, like, at the time, and in some ways, like, this still continues to be the case, it's like the thought of, like, really being more authentically yourself, like, in public, like, in print, you know, like, in this kind of, like, permanent way, right, it can be a little bit scary. So, like, I'm, you know, I've got this stuff in there about, like, you know, like, aware Simmons and, like, cuddle zombies and shit like that. And especially, like, at the time when I was, like, at McKinsey, you know, where it's, like, it felt uncomfortable, you know, for sure, to be doing that. And so I think what's interesting is, like, what I hope comes across, like, in all of that is, like, this real, like, ultimately, like, the part of what I was wanting people to get out of that and what I was feeling and making it was, like, this experience of, like, you know, the person who's writing this book actually cares about you and wants you to succeed, you know, and along the way wants you to have, like, an actual good time where you feel something, like, you feel good while you're doing this thing, like, learning this technology, which is has a reputation for being difficult to learn, right? And so I think kind of happens is that's kind of come across, and that, I think that's part of why people kind of still reach out to me about this stuff. And so to tie it all together, you know, just I you know, the struggle is with really you know, going out of your being yourself in public in some way. And I think that in general, people are drawn to that. And I think that you know about this because you are doing things along the same lines. And I reached out to you because I was really drawn to that. I thought it was awesome.
Well, and I've spoken a lot about this in the past that I think that, you know, those of us that are funky and have different backgrounds and different viewpoints, I think it's almost our responsibility to be that in public to inspire others, because everybody has that little, you know, funky, happy, you know, side of their personality, no matter how dry they present. Everybody has, you know, that, I guess, the inner child is probably really where it comes from. And, you know, reaching and inspiring that is really important. So yeah, it is cool. And I totally understand the, imposter syndrome, I think is the words for the, for, I guess, the fear. But, well, clearly it was, the smash hit critical success. I actually thought, I remember at the time I had been reading another book about, I had been self-teaching programming, obviously. And, it's like learning how to learn. I think that's there is a Coursera course, but this is the book that accompanies it. And I forget, the book was called Mind Over Matter or something, but it's,
Barbara Oakley.
I love her. And that really changed my life. Cause I had traditionally been very, very, like, English, abstract art, not really done a lot of maths, not really done a lot of sciences. And now I know it's because I just hadn't practiced. And now, you know, you practice, you get good at something. But I remember learning about the you know, mind mapping and memory mapping, and how the even like the most advanced memory people, I don't know, they have competitions for memory. And a lot of them have spoken, actually, I think it was a Netflix documentary that, not even documentary. They're like 20-minute expert. That's what I call it. It makes you feel like you're an expert on a topic because it talks about it for like 20 minutes. It's on like Vox and Netflix. I forget what it's called. Explained. There was Explained on memory.
Okay.
And they say that the best, you know, the human brain is made to remember narratives and stories because that's how we pass down culture and that's how we survive. And we're, you know, the brain is not good at remembering dry information without attaching a narrative to it. And I actually believed it was a very intentional choice to create these wild images, I thought that was a, intentional choice by you to, like I said, it's so many years later and I have a hash map hobbit just stuck in my head forever, just living rent free in my brain for the rest of my life. Thank you, Daniel. So
that poor hobbit.
Yeah. And, but only like the left side of him, because like after that I was like, got it. And like just used it.
Oh my God. Yeah.
So
can I tell you something about this?
Please.
Hobbit? So my spouse, Jess, did the drawings in the book. And so, like, that drawing of, like, poor Frodo, I think, is, like, to me, like, just a little bit disturbing. And I love that. And also, like, Jess made this T-shirt of that, like, with that Frodo drawing. And with, like, in like, Lord of the Rings style font, mm-hmm. says, like, if you loved it, then you should have put a ring on it. And it has a picture of the One Ring, too.
So are you selling these T-shirts? Is this just a personal? Are you going to tempt us with that option?
Right now, I think I'm the only. Oh, Justin's made, I think, like tote bags and stuff with it, too. But I don't know. I should put together a store for sure. But that's, oh my God, it cracks me up. Because it's like, he's, you know, he's like that pose and everything that he's making. Oh yeah.
He's making like a, I do remember. Yeah. It sticks in your brain. That's so, I guess, so that's like, that's one side of creating technical content. And actually, it's funny. Yeah. The other, I always give Normie, Eric Normand, a hard time for his, his robots that like he has, they're like really attractive, distracting robots in some of his stuff. And I'm like, okay, hey, robot lady. Yeah, I want to know about Core Async or like the Core Async lady. Like she was also super fine. So like, it's funny that like all these, I guess, props for learning. But touching on that. Yeah. So something that him and I have spoken about in the past is, you know, when you create instructional content at first, you know, you kind of, this aspect that you don't necessarily know what you're getting into until you're there. And then suddenly, you know, you have the responsibility of enclosure script. It's a little better than I can imagine trying to create instructional content for JavaScript. By the time you finish the video, it would be outdated, I imagine. But closure's a little bit better about that. Yeah. But, you know, because you said you wrote the book when you were, you know, in your 20s. Do you have any, like, I guess, fears or worries or concerns about, I guess, the responsibility of content? And I guess also extending that to, like, how many people are using that Emacs config? Like, have the start of the Emacs config and, like, branched off and done it? And I guess, like, the how many people you've inspired with things like an Emacs config and, you know, like when to use the proper, I don't even remember because at the time I read the book, I didn't know any other opinions. So it's not like I could make a determination on, oh, this book is really opinionated or not. But yeah, just will you speak on that a little bit?
Yeah. Oh, sure. Yeah. No, this is, I think I've mentioned elsewhere that like the Emacs thing is kind of like this albatross for the book. I don't know. In terms of like feeling responsibility, I just choose not to feel it, and that makes my.
You can do that. Can you teach me your Jedi mind tricks? What is? What do you mean you? What do you mean you opt out of anxiety? Yeah. What can you? Can you? That's the real thing I need to dig into.
Yeah. Any problems that come up, just consider them to be a learning exercise for the reader, and that's. Well, this isn't doing what I thought it would do. Like, well, it's a good growth opportunity there. So at the time I felt like the landscape was different, and I felt like it was harder to get some kind of editor, get something set up that you could be productive. It wasn't impossible, obviously, but it was harder back then. And so, at the time, and also I feel like at the time, like the Emacs part of it was pretty well received, which, yay, that's great. But it hasn't aged well for sure. Like there's, the commands in there are, I think even the commands have changed, like the bindings, the CIDR bindings. And so like
opening my personal edition cross-reference.
Yeah. And so I tried to preface it with like, you don't need to do this, but here is something, you know, in case you need to. Yeah. so my big fear actually there is like, I hope I haven't turned people off to Clojure, because I get, you know, from like them trying to get this working and then getting frustrated, you know? Mm-hmm. I do think that the parts about just describing like, this is what a frame is and a buffer and whatnot, you know, like all that stuff, I think is like, it's okay. And that will hold up probably over time. But yeah. And as far as the rest of the content, I think I have a section on like STM. I don't remember, but you know, if I were to make a second edition or something, like that would go out. And then yeah, there's been some interesting new stuff that's been added, like transducers, for example. It's probably important to talk about that. But it is great. Like it is actually really nice that for the most part, the content still holds up. I don't need to change anything because Link Clojure is so stable, and that's great for me personally.
Well, let me, as someone who creates content around Clojure Script, David Nolan has strong opinions on no breaking changes. He sticks to the Clojure way. But so much of Clojure Script is built on like JavaScript's reactive libraries, React, and React changes every 2 seconds. So that's hooks. Why? I get it. But anyway, something. Yeah. It's sad because it then be kind of becomes a blocker for creativity, because like the reason that we get into doing this is to help people and create fun content. But then, you know, you fear. I haven't experienced as much of it. I think I'm starting to get to the point in my, I guess, popularity where like people are negative, because there's people are mean to public figures, yo. People don't think that public figure, just us as a society, we are not nice to people in general, public figures. I don't know why. We don't think of them as people. We think of them as symbols. I'm like starting to get to like the point of, you know, sometimes people, I try to unengage. But have you experienced any sort of like, any sort of negativity as the result of being a public figure?
Well, I mean, first, I'm really sorry that you're experiencing that. That's that sucks. No, like,
it's nothing.
No, it's something. It's like, you know, this is something that you're doing out of like the generosity of your heart, and you know, that's like
that it's because some people want to feel seen, and it's their way of engaging. I think as technical developers, a lot of times we use as a fallback for engaging with material, we tend to criticize it and look for holes in it. And that's just our way. Right. Like almost like, you know, when you read a PR, your brain's looking for criticisms for the most part for the PR review. And I think we fall into those patterns. So I think most of what I've experienced, and I actually know a really good friend of mine is also a conference speaker, content creator, technical. And we have a name for it, and it's an effect of like you give a talk or you do something and people raise their hand in the Q&A, and like, really, they're just trying to engage with you who hosted this content. But the only way they know how to engage is through a critical lens of like, oh, well, have you tried it in Rust? And it's like, this talk had nothing to do with Rust, but thank you. I don't know Rust. Thank you. I'm glad that you know Rust, because really they're just trying to tell me they know Rust is kind of like what – and that's what I realized. So it's not like malicious negativity, but you know, it can be just people trying to engage, which is why I say like it's fine, it's not a big deal, because I can, I guess, recognize that, and I respect that they're trying to engage. But I guess back to you though.
I mean, yeah, for sure. I mean, like, it's funny. Like the very first Amazon review I got was for my book. You know, book goes out there. It's finally published. You know, after these years of work. So excited, waiting to get like a review on Amazon, and like very first review, 1 star, and oh my gosh, this person had some complaints, and some of them were fine. I'm like, well, okay, you know, it's like he didn't like the humor or something, and I think one of the complaints was like something about how I didn't talk about atoms, which is like, I think one of the chapters has like atoms like in the chapter title, you know? So some of the complaints I felt like were a little bit off base. yeah, for myself, after doing this stuff and like, you know, other stuff that I do too is like, you know, photography and like this, the stuff that I've been doing like offline is like the main thing that I think helps me is just like really like in my core, knowing that like whatever, like what other, for the most part, what other people are saying and doing has nothing to do with me, you know, like, and that's like, that's been liberating for me. Yeah, like I don't, it's, so even now, it's like the thing that like I'm kind of gearing up for these days is, you know, like I've shared with you, I've been working on this full stack framework for Clojure, something I've just been kind of toiling away on for years, and like I've mentioned it like once or something in a blog post, or, you know, I think have mentioned it, but I've never actually wanted to show it to people. But like, I'm starting to actually show it.
You just gave a talk on it, yeah, kind of. Yeah, yeah. I'm going to like link to the talk.
Right. Yeah, yeah, yeah. So I'm just starting to actually like show the code like in public and engage with people in this way. And it's funny. It's like, so the one piece I gave a talk on is like, you know, this, it's an alternative component library, or, you know, in the same vein as like Stuart Sears component and integrant and mount and clip, and that's interesting. So it's like, you know, one of the first responses is like, why another component library? And it's like, it's not, you know, it's not, I totally understand like where that's coming from, right? And it's like people like and it's a valid question, right? And I want to answer that question. I feel like it's part of my responsibility to satisfactorily, you know, explain like why did this happen? But it's also not what I'm excited to be talking about, or like what I mean, like what I'm really hoping for, like in engaging with people. But I don't know. Even with that, I feel like with this other stuff, like putting it out there, like it's just kind of like mentally preparing myself for like, yeah, oh yeah, there's going to be all kinds of questions. People just aren't going to be like, you know, they're not living in my brain, you know, and I'm trying to think of like, so I'm trying, what I'm trying to do here is like, I guess, distinguish between like, yeah, sometimes there are like, you know, jerks out there that are being jerks, and like, but then like with other kinds of engagement, when it comes to like putting out this technical work in some way, right? Like people are just being themselves, you know, and they're talking, like, whatever is coming out, like, whatever, however they're expressing themselves, or like the questions or comments, whatever they have, you know, it's like, that's what they care about, you know? And like, that's like, I don't, like, yes, for me, it's just like, there's a level of like, not, like, this really hasn't, like, if I feel a sting or something for some of it, it's just like kind of reminding myself like, oh, it's, this really has nothing to do with me, mm-hmm. you know? And continuing to like really like whatever it is that someone's saying, like take the, learn whatever I can from that. Mm-hmm. So like, if people have questions, like, so like with this one library donut system, people have questions about like, why should I, like, how is this different from Integrin? Then it's just like, again, this is like, with that in particular, like, I don't even know if this falls under the category of what we're talking about, you know, but there's like a little bit, I guess I should say, like, internally, there's like a little bit of like deflation around like, oh, but like, don't you see, like, what about the cool part of what I explained? And like, don't you find that cool too?
I think, you know? David has a phrase that I love that he says, he'll divert a little bit into, well, the interesting question is blah, blah, blah. Like somebody will ask an irrelevant question. And I've noticed he'll say, well, no, the interesting part is this. And then I'll explain the interesting part. So maybe we should all steal that. And like it's like, But I think you bring up a lot of really good points. And I think that something I appreciate about something I appreciate about you as a creator and as a friend is, you know, it's really clear in your attitude and in just engaging with you that you have, you know, put a lot of effort towards self-work and, you know, practicing gratitude and, you know, I guess becoming what some would say, I'll use the words like a more enlightened individual. And, you know, that's something that I enjoy about our friendship is, you know, a lot of times I do have some friends that have done that, but not, there's not as many in the tech world. And that's something I really, admire. I remember looking at your stuff and, you know, your gratitude project is such a great project. And I'd love for you to like share for those who haven't stumbled across it on the internet. You know, it's such a small project, but it's really cool.
Oh, I appreciate that. I really appreciate that. And that's something I really like about you too. Like, I enjoy that. We can talk about this kind of stuff. I'll share, like, for myself, I definitely am drawn to like these Buddhist ideas of, you know, love and compassion for everybody. Like, I did Aikido for many years, and it's kind of like the same ethos behind that. Yeah. But it's just like a real appreciation for like where people are coming from of like, yeah, everyone's coming from wherever, like they're dealing with their own shit. You know, no one's, I think most people, almost everyone in some ways struggles with like, how do you actually interact with other people, you know? And especially like in the tech world around this, like, so anyway, but like with the, I don't know, I have a lot of thoughts on like, on kind of tech culture and how that affects people. With this gratitude project in particular, yeah, so that was, I think, this some form of this has lived for, I don't know, for, this was one of the first, I think, closure projects I made. So the website is gratefulplace.com. The idea is, you know, people just can write something that they're grateful for on it. Like, and it's like this kind of public board, and you can see things going back for, I don't know, I think at least 8 years of people kind of writing stuff. And it was interesting. Like I kind of, so I'll tell you, I think I most recently like revamped this. The most recent version was released, I think something like 3 years ago. And at the time, like that was like, it was really important to me to go through this process again and try to make something that would be like, you know, a bit more, I don't know, just that maybe people would use it a little bit more. It's funny because it's like, it's not a thing where it's just like, oh my God, I really got to get my, you know, my KPIs up here. You know what I mean? Like, I'll tell you like behind it. So this is actually a bit of a personal story.
Ooh.
Is that okay?
Please. That's the whole point of this podcast is to meet the person behind the GitHub, behind the book.
Okay. Yeah. It's interesting. I did. Part of where that came from was like, it was a mix of a few different things. And so one of them was this really painful experience I had like with one of my family members. And so it's just like content warning here. Like, like one of my family members has like really struggled a lot in life. Right. And, for a period of time with me, even like when I was working on my book, he stayed with me, and I could really see like how much they were struggling, like particularly like with alcohol use, right? And years later, after that period, like they had this experience that was like, I was afraid that they were going to kill themselves, right? And so, part of like what, you know, this, all these experiences have, part of how that's shaped me has been to really try to understand really, really caring and loving about this person and wanting to understand deeply, like, how does this happen? Right. And so for me, it's like been this, you know, kind of like this journey that like I'm still engaged in, you know, of like really understanding, really, really understanding, like, well, part of it is just like understanding violence, right? And, you know, and this is also part of my background too, of like, you know, my mom was a refugee from Vietnam War. Right. And so like being able to like look back and like, look at this person who I love, I was like scared for them, and like, look at like the circumstances behind it of like, it's not just like their own life. Right. But it's like the life, like my mom's life, and like, how did she like how this like impacted her, you know, and like this kind of violence can kind of be passed down through generations, and the way that can affect people, mentally, right, psychologically, and this kind of like trauma, right, that gets passed on. And so, you know, this is for that website. It was kind of in a way born out of like, in some part, like this feeling of helplessness, you know, of like, you know, ultimately it's this person's like living their own life. I can't directly, you know, do anything there, but it was like this wanting to, share the tools that I've found, at least for myself, you know, and that again, like I continue to, I feel like I'm being too vague here, but, you know, this person, my family member that I love, it's just like really, really seeing like that they didn't, I mean, not to like trivialize it, or to like to simplify it, oversimplify it, but like knowing like this person's suffering a lot, you know, and this is why, like, this is why they use, you know, and there's this, went through this whole journey of like understanding like this from like this kind of behavioral perspective of like people make choices that are like the behaviors have like a kind of payoff for them in some way. Right. Seeing this like from this perspective of really like deep compassion for them, of like they are trying to survive, and they're doing things that like they've found have worked for them. And the alternative is what, you know, something much worse. Right. That's what they have. You know, this project was like kind of born out of that, of like seeing like this really intense suffering, and even in myself, like growing up in this, you know, environment too, of like being this child of a refugee and growing up in this home environment where like that kind of trauma hadn't been really worked through, you know, but trying to find ways to, and tools to kind of like work with that. And so like the most recent iteration of this website, Grateful Place, like, mentions like, not, you know, not just gratitude, but then also these other kind of, tools of like kindness and compassion and generosity and these things that like, for me, you know, I've found that like coming back to these and like bringing my attention to them and, you know, has been a way for myself to like really kind of heal from all that. Right. And then so also like the broader perspective too, like at that point in time, like this was like something like two or three years or something into the Trump administration. And, you know, seeing like, you know, being an Asian person and like hearing on TV, people saying things about like, go back to where you came from, you know, and like, no, like seeing like all these refugees and like the refugee crisis on our border, right? Our southern border. So anyway, I know this is maybe not what you were expecting, but that's like, that's the truth behind like the whole, you know, like why I wanted to do that. You know, it was just having some thought of like, you know, just trying to work with the tools that I had, you know, part of those are like the skills of programming and whatnot to try to build something that would maybe in some way make some kind of difference. And, you know, it's like, I have a sense of skepticism around it for myself of like, how much of a difference is this making? But on the other hand, it's just like, well, if it makes some difference at all for some people, like that's good enough for me.
Well, you know? Can I let you in on a secret? I was pairing earlier with a coworker of mine who lives in Brazil, and I said mm-hmm. something along the lines of, "Oh, I gotta go. I have this podcast with Daniel Higginbotham later," and he goes, "Oh, wow, he changed my life." And I'm like, "What?" He said, "I heard him. Apparently, you had spoken on the book Nonviolent Communication, and at some point in the past, and." As per that recommendation, this person consumed that book and he says that it was life-changing for him and it really inspired him and it changed the way that he, you know, his interactions with people over time, and he was very grateful for that. And that was well, like when he heard your name, that's, he's like, "Oh, Daniel, okay. Yeah. Oh, I got to meet him once at a, I think it was Closure South or something. And yeah, I talked about this book and it really changed my life. And I know that you and I have spoken on the book, The Body Keeps the Score.
Yeah.
And how important and that is, and I think the trauma being passed down is, I think, such an important thing that we forget when we look at people struggling. It never starts. The pain never starts with one person. All pain is passed down over time. But you do make a difference because look at all the people that have learned closure from your books, and then even talking about this. This is probably some of my favorite content on this podcast ever, because we're all real people and we all have trauma and we all pretend like we don't somehow, like in a professional context. And that's ridiculous.
Right.
And yeah. I love, because I practice daily gratitude. I do. Sometimes I wake up and I just think about all of the things I'm grateful for. And when your mind starts thinking in patterns, because your brain is lazy, it wants to do the same thing. And so, you know, if you train your brain to think in positivity about what you're grateful for, like to me, it's like spirituality push-ups. A little bit.
Yeah, that's a good way to put it. You got some great spiritual abs going on.
Yeah. And I love to see a website that was conducive to that. I'm like, oh, this is cool. I've been doing this in my brain, but it can inspire other people. Like we can all, because you read through the forum and you see the things that people are grateful for, from, you know, from the sun in the sky to their dog, to their cat, to their career. And it's just, and then you... having the opportunity to share your own gratitude and then be inspired by other people's gratitude is, you know, that's the kind of habits and actions and patterns that overcome trauma. So that's a really cool thing to be engaged in. And, you know, it's funny. I think that I had spoken with Alex Miller some time ago on this podcast. Mm-hmm. And one of my favorite parts was the end when he was talking about his personal spirituality and how he believes in helping others. And he's a member of the Unitarian Universalist Church, and and how, you know, that is, you know, he's part of the core team, and he has those core values. And it's interesting to me that you are maybe in like an honorary, not core team, but you definitely have a huge influence in the closure community. And that is also, you know, a large part of your mentality and spirituality. And it kind of makes me grateful that we have these people around, I guess, that, you know, because we don't really talk about, you don't talk about spirituality or anything like that at work very often. But I love having the opportunity to share these thoughts on a podcast and get them out so we can all kind of inspire each other to be, I don't want to say better people, because it's not better people, but in to find inner peace, I guess, engage in positive practices, I suppose.
Yeah, but I really appreciate, I mean, I appreciate so much what you're saying. One, like also sharing about your interaction earlier with the fellow from Brazil. And I didn't know that about Alex. But I also got what you were saying too about like, you don't want to say better, because it's like, that's part of the whole thing, right? The whole kind of like instrumentalizing capitalist mindset of like, you know, but you know, defining your worth in ways that are like unhealthy, right? But I got you. I know what you mean.
I guess now is a pretty good leeway into the project. We're bringing it all the way back around, the project that you reached out to me about. Which we are getting off the ground, and it's going to be, it's really fun, really exciting. We've been planning it for a while, but I will let you share a little bit more, about how we're trying to spread the love of closure to beginners, and kind of our, you know, that seems to be your intended, I don't want to say like, if you had a demographic, I really see you trying to help people that are more, at the beginning of their software journey. And, you know, I think that's kind of a theme, lately in the content that I'm making, and it's a secret, but you'll see. Yeah. But talking to you is the beginning of that, and getting involved with the drum roll. I want to let you announce it. Drum roll.
The Clownsole.
The Clownsole.
So the idea with the Clownsole is it's going to be like a kind of call-in show, right? Where what we want is for beginners to send us like their questions or concerns or things that like they're blocking them learning closure, right? And for the Clownsolers, so you and me and two other folks, Paula Giron, Arnaud Bressier, and Mike Fikes, are the kind of core Clownsolers, I guess. And you know, what we want to try to do there is just, you know, have a conversation and help them get unstuck, right? And also help, you know, just help them like learn and grow as beginning closure developers, and do it in an environment that will be fun and friendly and supportive. And so I think that's like the elevator pitch. I could stop there.
Well, it's cool. I want to touch on something you said that I think it's wonderful that you know, we have people, honestly, people like us involved trying to get to the people starting their journey. So then what they learn are patterns of, because I know it's something we've had a bunch of meetings about this privately, but something that we're always trying to keep in perspective is how the patterns that were, you know, how influential that, you know, mentors can be to other people. Mm-hmm. And we have this opportunity to start them off on this super positive foot of, you know, we brought up kind of a lot how tech kind of can have this like hustle culture. I hate the word toxic, but I'll use it here. But like some of the tech bro toxicity of, you know, being negative and putting each other down. And we have this opportunity to like get in at the ground floor with these people at the beginning of their journey and influence them to, you know, have an open mind and ask for help and don't feel shame. And, you know, it's such a unique opportunity to have to influence these people at the beginning of their journey, because that, you know, that's like the foundation of then their involvement in the closure verse. And that, you know, we can have fun and, I don't know. I just, think it's necessary. And you do too, obviously.
No, for sure. I think that's like, part of what feels really exciting about it for me. I mean, you know, another part of it is just to get to be goofy on and hang out and have a good time with people. I know it's been like in our planning meetings, it's like those have all been so fun. And it's funny because it's like they all have gone over, just I think because we're just having a good time and want to be hanging out. But yeah, I think it's like it's interesting. There's I don't know. Like I don't know if this is like really the venue for me to like kind of go on like my, you know, indictment of like, you know, Western culture and how it fails.
Oh, please.
Whatever. But
go for it. Do you have an elevator pitch for it? Like, do you have a,
Oh my, well, it's okay. It's so interesting because like so much of what we experience and like learn is like, you know, like we're involved in these like systems of hierarchy and coercion, basically, right? And you know, starting like from school, like you know, on up, right? And so, you know, it's like, you know, tech culture is just a part of like the wider culture, right? And like this is, I feel like a lot of times, like people get drawn to, I don't know what it's like for everybody, but a lot of times people like get drawn to tech culture because like there are these elements of like like it's, you know, you maybe feel like freer to express your ideas and you know, that it feels like a little bit like outside of, you know, mainstream culture, right? But at the same time, like this, like these ways that we learn of interacting with each other, I feel like are so ingrained. And I want to talk about like training my dog, but I don't want to. I feel like this is like, I'm just going to talk about it, and it's going to be, you know, hopefully I won't be misunderstood as like, you know, infantilizing people or something like that. But for me, it was interesting, like going through this process of like training my dog, and like when I got him, it's like this idea of like using positive reinforcement training. Right. And so like, that's like no punishment, no, you know, coercive methods. Right. And the idea was that like, you know, if I want to get him to do something, maybe I should make it rewarding for him, you know? And it was like this really interesting to really deeply kind of like in myself, like work out like, oh God, like I just want him to stop doing this. I want him to stop, you know, chewing on this thing. I want him to stop doing this other thing. I should just be able to make him stop, you know? And to like shift away from that to seeing this is like, oh my God, this is, so you know what I said earlier about being yourself in public and how that can be uncomfortable. Anyway, here I am. But no, but like, so like truly, okay, I love animals. And I think that animal cognition is like super fascinating, for example, you know, and so for myself, okay, I will be just completely put myself out there. It's just like really, really seeing like this creature. I don't know if you can see him right now. He's just like, you know, he's on his bed there in my office. but just like seeing like these creatures as like truly equal beings, you know, like, and like really working through like, how do I see this as like a cooperative endeavor of like, you know, I want something from him, you know, but like, what, like, can I really shift my perspective to think like, well, I should make this rewarding for him. I should make it fun for him. I should make it enjoyable for him in some way, right? So what does this have to do with the council? And so this is where I don't want like to be misunderstood or for me to think of like, you know, I think of people like animals in this way. But it has to do with like, it's just, it has to do with like how we interact with each other and how we treat each other, you know? And like this notion of like in the relationships that we have with anybody, with like the stranger online, you know, of like truly seeing them as like an equal person. And so this is even like the name of like the clown soul to like, to, you know, to take away any kind of like mystique or like aura of expertise or hierarchy or something like that. Right. Like, you know, we're here to help you, but also it is a great gift for us to be able to work with beginners. And to like, the way I see it is like, we get to continue to refine our own understanding and our own communication skills. You know what I mean? So it's not like that, oh, we're generous, we're here giving. It's like, you know, for the people who are willing to like come on there and like ask us these things, like, yeah, that's scary, I think, right? For most people, like that's anxiety provoking. And for people to like give us that gift of they're going to be there, they're going to give us their time, you know, and be with us, like for this, and then we get to, I mean, for myself, it's just like continuing to like, how do I really refine how I can be supportive of someone? How do I really refine how I can make something interesting and entertaining for someone, you know? And so like, so anyway, I think that's part of what's behind it for me. And like I said, just like to have a good time. You know, yeah. We talked about doing like these different bits of like, yeah, answer like you're in a horror movie, or, you know, answer like you're a cowboy or something like that. And, you know, so like it's this mindset, I know I'm kind of going on here, but like there's, you know, when we talk about these ideas of like hierarchy and coercion, like within the tech community, like I feel like I want to kind of soften that somehow, but like everyone knows what I'm talking about. You know what I mean? We've all experienced that in some way, right? And like the coercion comes in like these, like whatever various forms. Like sometimes it's just being like, you know, like, you know, insensitive or like mean in some way, right? Like, you know, I think it's, for me, it's really about finding these different ways to relate to each other that are much more enjoyable and gratifying for everyone involved, you know. But maybe it's a little bit more work.
Yeah, so something that I will respond in two parts. So you're talking about training dogs. Let me tell you about training cats.
Because
there, that's something that I do. I volunteer for my SPCA, and I foster cats, and I typically get them when they're either like either very unsocialized or very young or whatever. And I consider it part of my, I love making them into good cats because they're all good cats, but some people don't like certain behaviors and they don't understand. And there is a personality. His name is Jackson Galaxy, and I have...
Oh, yeah.
Oh, I love that man. I have watched all of his YouTube videos. I've read his books, and he's actually... some of it is instructional, but he does have a book that is more of like an autobiography, and it is just... It's very good. He has struggled with, you know... addictions and cats, and just his life story is so great and so relatable, and so I really enjoyed that. But you know, he's really one of the only people that talks about training cats, because cats are 100% trainable. They just don't respond to negative reinforcement. And so, for example, how you train a cat is one, you do timed feedings, because that's one of the only motivations for them is food. And really, it's just about working with them to make it good for them. Like if they're doing something, the idea is like two yeses and a no. Provide two yeses. I think a traditional is a countertops. Some people don't want their cats on their countertops. And so, so you think about what is the cat getting from getting up on the countertop? Cause it's going up there for some reason. Is it getting water from the sink, running water? Well, maybe around there you should provide a better yes for it. So provide a water fountain or a nice fresh stream of water for it. So it wants to go there instead. Or is it getting up on there to hang out with you because it likes the height? Well, you should get a cat tree so it can be up at their preferred height to hang out with you. And those would be like two yeses. And then there's and then the no's. You give them a gentle dissuasion. You know, you can do like, they have these little spiky countertop things that like when they, to dissuade them. The other thing is a lot of people think that a squirt bottle is appropriate as a discipline mechanism, and it is not. Because the only thing a cat understands when you spray it with a bottle is that you're a bad guy. You're an asshole. You just sprayed him with water because the cat doesn't understand that it's even doing anything wrong. So all it learns to do is the cat learns to hate you because you are the one giving the discipline.
Right.
And there are other mechanisms. Like there's this, I utilize these, it's like a motion sensor dust off that makes that sound that they're scared of. And so if you don't want them on the countertops, you can put this up there. Then when they climb up there, it goes tss, like a dust off can. Yeah. And they're like, oh shit, I'll see ya. so the idea, yeah. That really resonates with me about training any, and it is in cats, just more so than dogs. They're just negative is not reinforcement. So you have to work with them. And I learned that through, engaging with Jackson Galaxy's content. And so highly recommend. I guess that's the first point. And the other thing, you mentioned that, the gift that we give, the gift that we get being able to give back. And it reminds me of if there are these fellowship programs, they're commonly referred to as 12-step programs, for people dealing with really just any problem in their life that their life has become unmanageable through some action that they're trying to get help with. And, the beginning of the 12 steps have to do with, kind of realizing you have a problem, taking a personal inventory, getting a sponsor but the later steps of this 12 steps all has to do with giving back and building community. Mm-hmm. And becoming a person's, they use the word sponsor, but mentor, really. Mm-hmm. And that is very, very important for a lot of people. So it's interesting that you, had mentioned that, it's really, it just reminded me that like, it's not taking from us. We are becoming better versions of ourselves by having the opportunity to help others. It's not taking away from us. And, I do have a number of qualms with a lot of those groups, but, I do think that is a valid part of the, literature that they, in the program and everything.
A little bit of a non sequitur, but I just remember thinking about, the calling those recovery programs and just like, what is it that you're recovering? Here's how I'll make it relevant. I feel like in general, like in our culture, in our society, like we're really, we're disconnected in like these really, painful and I think unnecessary ways. Right. And maybe that's so vague as to just be like a platitude or almost meaningless, but I think it's, like to tie it all kind of back together, I think part of it has to do you mentioned the body keeps a score, right? And the ways in which like I think we're disconnected from our own bodies, I think it makes it harder to connect with other people, And with tech culture in particular, I feel like it's bodies are almost bad, There's like the real dominant kind of sense of like, well, it's just my body is just a vehicle for my brain. you know, or for my mind. And I think that, you know, what I'm wanting to kind of recover is just like more ways of like genuinely and joyfully connecting with other people, like in tech communities. You know, I feel like I have this like outside of tech communities, but to be able to do this like with the console, and again, not to put like too much pressure on us, any of it, we're gonna we're gonna be on there for an hour and we're just gonna be goofing off and having a good time. But for me, this is also part of where it comes from, is like, you know, I think you had mentioned too, like maybe like getting on your balance board or something, like, or maybe you were on your balance board at one point and we were like, no, you should definitely do this, like during all the console meetings, you know?
Yeah.
But like,
I was having a tough time that day. And so I had this meeting and I was just super stressed out. And actually, I think that's the first time we talked about the body. I think I said like, I need, and not like a balance board off Amazon. I do like Indo board, which is like, it's basically like a yoga surf trainer thing. It's a whole thing. And I think I said like, sorry guys, I'm going to be doing this. Body keeps a score. I don't know what you want from me. I need to let some stress out through my body. This is what I'm doing now. And it was, I did fall like what once?
Yeah.
I did. Yeah. Yeah. I fell once. I remember. But yeah. Well, oh, we have one more. I don't want to forget our announcement. The announcement. The
okay. Next Wednesday? Monday?
No, different announcement. Different announcement. Okay. The console. We're doing the console and we'll be posting that on our Twitters. But all of this goodness is available for hire. Yes, that is right. Ladies, gentlemen, people of all backgrounds, all of this wonderful insight can be hired and bought. That's not the
right. Oh my gosh.
Such a bad direction to go. Are you take it away, yeah. Take it away. You know what I'm talking about.
Right. Yeah. No, I'm doing contracting and consulting again. So, part of this is, wanting to fund the work I'm doing around creating a, you know, full stack, single page app, you know, Clojure web framework. Right. I also really enjoy, you know, consulting and contracting and like working with folks in that way. So yeah, definitely. I'm for hire.
So how, oh God, yeah, that didn't feel good to say, did it? I'm for hire. No, your services are for hire. You are not for hire. Your services are for hire. okay. So I think beyond the technical skills, if you've been listening to this podcast the whole time, you know, you have a lot to, there are a lot of smart people that are software developers. There are a lot of great frameworks, but I think that it, you know, I think you have a lot to offer to a team that is more holistic than that. Being a good, you know, good people bring up a team. Good, positive interactions help people be happier, and happier people write better software, as it turns out. So, you know, not that I'm trying to swoon you into like, got a toxic work environment? Well, do I have the man for you? Daniel Higginbotham will come with his insight and spirituality and just really, you know, spiritual up the place. Let me tell you. Like, maybe people don't do that, but also realize that that is something that you add. Not only do you have technical expertise, but I can't imagine, you know, working on it, or I imagine that working on a team with you would be a very positive experience. So that is, you know, another thing that you are adding to the table beyond the technical insight. We all know that you have. So yeah, if you need some positive, you need some gratitude, hit my man up.
Yeah. Or if you want to hear me talk about how dolphins can talk to each other, You know, I could bring that too.
Dolphins do some sketchy shit. We're not going to talk about that. But I have a very I have a very low opinion of dolphins. I'll have you know.
wait a minute. Okay, well, I'm glad that this is coming out at the end. Otherwise, I don't know.
I'll tell you privately. I feel like people listening, the people that know this horrible fact about dolphins, are going to be like, oh my gosh, you know it. But it's a horrible, just Google worst thing about dolphins, and I guess you'll figure it out. Don't Google it around any children. Just a warning. Or like on your work computer, maybe. Is it a good idea? But why do you know that dolphins talk to each other?
Well, okay. I don't know. How? I mean, we're like an hour. And,
Okay. All right. Last factoid. And then you're right.
This is one of my favorite things in the universe. Okay.
Oh, no.
So this was like, as I was like learning how to train Rory, my dog, got really into like learning about like the person who came up with clicker training, operant conditioning. Anyway,
Skinner.
So
no. Skinner was the bad one, and then this the clicker training. Go on.
What's the woman's name? Anyway, she has a book titled "Don't Shoot the Dog," which she hates that title. Like her publisher, or whatever, came up with that title. Mm-hmm. Anyway, really fascinating person. Story is that okay. You can teach dolphins to learn the command "do something novel," right? So dolphins will do something that they've never shown you before, right? So like you can get them to learn all these different tricks, and you can teach them the concept, and not even the concept, but you can teach them how to. You can teach them like the sign, you know, a word basically. For novelty, they will understand that and they'll do that for you. So I remember reading that one of the ways that a dolphin did this was they went to the bottom of their like enclosure and drew like a spiral in the bottom, like in the silt at the bottom, like with their like nose or snout or whatever, right? Like, which apparently like it's kind of a rough surface down there too. So yeah, it's a very delicate thing to be able to do this. And so like, this dolphin got told to do something new and they made spiral art at the bottom of like their, you know, like what? This is amazing. Okay. But you can also teach dolphins a command or like a symbol for like do something together. Right. So you can tell, you know, as like you teach the dolphins, like the different, you know, flips and whatever, you know, you can tell them like do this thing together. All right. Now, what some trainers have done is they gave the command, do something new and do it together. So that means that the dolphins have to communicate with each other about what new thing they're going to do to show the trainer. And they can do this. Isn't that crazy? Isn't that amazing?
Well, it indicates the connection because it's, I mean, part of it is verbal, but animals have this access to this whole other like universe of connectivity that like they can talk. I feel like half of them can talk to like the elves and we can't for the most part. And yeah, animals are, the dolphins can clear. They have so many aspects, of communication that we don't even see or consider or anything. So that's, you know, that is really amazing about dolphins. So that is the factoid for the end. Gosh, this was such a wonderful, wonderful, awesome episode. I'm so excited to share this. And thank you. Thank you for being your unadulterated self, for being your authentic. Thank you for your authenticity.
Thanks for having me.
You know, I know that this will inspire others. And I'm excited for that. Oh, one last question. What book are you currently engaging with? If you were to choose a book to change somebody's life, we talked about nonviolent communication, also Body Keeps a Score, but is there a book or concept that you would like to leave us with for more life-changing opportunities?
God, that's a really good question. the one that just like was, I guess, maybe most recent, I actually reread it, which I don't do much of these days. But the book is called Unwinding Anxiety. The idea behind this book, and so I think maybe I picked this one too because it's like, it's also kind of like more on the technical end in a way, mm-hmm. in the sense of like it's I don't know, it might appeal more to like a broader technical audience. Anyway, the idea behind it is that anxiety is a behavior that produces a reward, like within you, right? And the reward can be, and often is, like an avoidance of something worse, like, you know, worse feelings or whatever, right? Hopefully I'm doing this guy's book justice. Mm-hmm. But so he talks about it from this perspective of like, in general, when you're doing things that you wish that you were not doing them or could stop doing them, one way that you can approach change for that is by really bringing your awareness to the moments when you are engaging in that behavior in some way. So he also talks about smoking, for example. And he says, like, when you really bring your awareness to smoking, and you like, what you end up doing is you start retuning the kind of reward, your brain's like model of like the reward for this behavior. So if you're paying attention to smoking, it's just like, oh, this actually tastes really bad, you know? he also talks about like replacing that reward with what he calls the bigger, better offer. So this is a lot like what we were just talking about with like the, you know, cat training, right? And so what he says, like the bigger, better offer there is just your own curiosity and kindness toward yourself around it. And like, this is one way, like a kind of process that you can engage in to kind of teach your brain like, oh, you know what, like this thing is actually not great for me. And by continuing to bring this kindness and curiosity like toward yourself around this, it kind of helps you build a build up a sense of like more of a sense of like agency and freedom around this behavior, and also like a kind of sense of resilience around it too. So I don't know, maybe that's a good enough blurb there, but I really like it.
Oh, great. Yeah. So yeah, that's I'm looking forward to and reading that book, because that I agree. I won't go into my personal experiences, but I agree. So there's never a good way to end this podcast, because I'm always having such a good time with people. But I guess I will take this opportunity to end it here. And I will, in the show notes, I will put Daniel's email if you'd like to talk to with him about anything, really, I imagine. But especially about consulting or the Clownsoul. There is a website for the Clownsoul called theclownsoul.com. And there is also a Slack channel we are creating. So you can look there at those places. So I look forward to releasing this, and I will see y'all soon.